This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The epidemic of police violence has hit home to many of us around the country, particularly because it is now so well documented and because activists with groups like Black Lives Matter are calling attention to it. But the daily trials and travails of living with the fear and threat of constant violence takes its toll on Black communities in particular. Now, a Los Angeles-based artist has used a creative and even somewhat lighthearted manner of expressing how people deal with being Black in American society. Zeal Harris's new solo show is called Home Remedies for Driving While Black. And I had the chance recently to speak with her about her art. Zeal Harris has an MFA in studio art from Otis College of Art and Design. She's had her work featured in a wide variety of exhibits. Welcome to the program, Zeal Harris.
Thank you very much.
So before we get into the details of this new exhibit that you will be showing that our LA audience can get a hold of, but our national audience can see a little bit of on our show, tell me about the backdrop to and the sort of broader context. In my introduction, I mentioned that that this is addressing the sort of day-to-day constant fear of the threat of violence that folks in the Black community, particularly in our during our epidemic of police violence, have to live through to deal with. How have your own personal experiences, your relationships determined and influenced this exhibit?
That's a lot to say, and it's taking 14 to 20 artworks to just answer that question. So that's what this show is about. It's part one of an exhibit. I still have a few more artworks to create. Three of the artworks are about people that I know personally who died while in police custody or, you know, because of police violence. Two of them were friends. These incidents have happened over the past 20 years within my life. I can say that I know 5 people who've been killed, and 4 of them were killed by police. So I have still one more to create about a person who passed away. And I can say that when I moved to Los Angeles, I felt like I was living in a police state.
And you moved from?
I moved from Washington, D.C. I moved from the East Coast. I grew up in Virginia. And so I was there for 20-something years before I came to Los Angeles. And so the fact of having to drive a lot, as well as being in this sort of post-9/11, you know, reality, made me feel like I was always constantly under surveillance in Los Angeles by the police. And I didn't have any negative or positive, you know, thoughts about the police specifically at that time. But over time, it has grown. And it's not just about Black people. But the more I talk to different types of people of different ethnicities, the more I find out that they have similar experiences sometimes, but the outcome just isn't always as bad. Mm-hmm. And statistics would prove that. Right. So, you know, what I'm interested in my work is big conversations, you know, these sort of like macro dialogues, macro discourses about racism and sexism and classism and different types of prejudices and the problems in the world. But I prefer to use daily life conversations and observations to have those conversations. Yes.
So some of your pieces are almost sort of comic book style scenes captured between people. Some of them have words that are exchanged, like you might read in a graphic novel type setting. And others are large, almost tableaus where there are collections of people. So tell us about specifically this exhibit. You've been an artist for a long time. This specific exhibit, I love the title, Home Remedies for Driving While Black. Are these intended to capture the kinds of conversations that you imagine happen between folks or that you know have happened between folks?
That's an interesting question. I would say that my work is always walking this murky line of autobiographical and biographical. And sometimes imagine. But for the most part, it's coming through my own personal experience from talking to people around me, you know, my social network, my friends, sometimes just getting into conversations with strangers. I might be sitting in a lobby somewhere waiting on something, and the person next to me has a completely unexpected story that, you know, touches on all of these socio-political issues that I really would like to address in my work, but in a charming and kind of non-didactic kind of way. So I find that often that it's hard for me to avoid the text. And, you know, there's this sort of classical school of thought that when you're making a painting, the people shouldn't show emotion and it shouldn't have text in it. And I mean, I guess at some point somebody said music shouldn't show emotion and it shouldn't have text in it or words, but then we have hip hop. So, I mean, not like I'm saying I see myself like a hip hop artist in painting, but I really relate to folk artists because there's much more freedom about what you can and can't do.
I mean, art should be about breaking boundaries.
Yeah. So, I feel that in terms of themes, my work is very much in line with a tradition of Southern Black vernacular artwork, which is considered to be folk art. I happen to be worldly, and I happen to be political, and I happen to be educated, and I still have the same concerns.
So tell us about some of these works. Can you give us maybe pick one or two? There's this one wonderful piece of two women riding a car together, which I suppose captures well this idea of home remedies for driving while Black. Tell us about this piece.
Okay, so this is one of the few artworks that I have that just has women in it and still deals with the issue of police violence. I mean, as I stated before, the people that I happen to have known who were killed by police or in the custody of police when they died, they were all male. And
we know police violence disproportionately impacts Black men.
Yes. And women are still impacted. And women are still impacted in the sense of having the fear of being pulled over and maybe not being able to flirt their way out of a situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this particular piece that you bring up is called Amnesty for Ngozi. And to protect the identity of one of my friends, you know, I took a different angle on dealing with police violence. Typically, I think we see someone who's pretty much innocent and unarmed who's being abused, treated badly, or killed by police when we see artwork about these things. But I wanted to expand this dialogue about what Blackness is. First of all, my friend in this particular painting is actually African, as an African from Africa. And she's an immigrant. And sometimes when we have these conversations about immigrants' rights, it somehow gets thrown over onto Latinos and also in a working class experience of being Latino.
And we know that Black immigrants within the immigrant diaspora face the worst forms of some of the highest statistics in terms of arrest and abuse.
Yeah. And we can think of someone like Abner Louima, for example, in New York City, who was I'm not sure what generation level of immigrant he was, but, you know, that was a pretty bad incident. Anyway, so my friend, you know, I just wanted to focus on her fear of driving that had to do with her being Black, African, female immigrant, and how at some point in time in her experience of being in America, she was probably in one of the most privileged levels of status one could have, having her job pay for her car, her home, and everything, and then losing her, her legal status as an immigrant, and then suddenly being in fear of the police at all times. So,
tell me about Target City. This is a piece between, it's a beautiful, loving piece, a man and a woman, I'm assuming they're lovers, on a swing together. How does this piece capture the fact that the threat of police violence invades our most intimate relationships?
That's true. All of my work is about intimate relationships. Even the way, the aesthetic with which I approach making my art, I consider it to be very intimate. I consider the experience of approaching my paintings to be an intimate experience. It's very detail oriented in that sense, kind of like traditionally stereotypically feminine in its approach, you know, and aesthetic. And in this particular piece, I wanted to deal with several conversations that I've overheard or taken part in, you know, with Black men who stated outright that Culver City cops don't like police. and
Culver City
Police. Mm-hmm. Yes, specifically driving through Culver City as opposed to many of the other specific places in Los Angeles. Now, these particular men may have been a little bit more upwardly mobile or not. I'm not really sure, but I found it curious that they all had the same perception of Culver City Police. And I often find it surprising that Black men of different socioeconomic status or, you know, economic levels have the same experience and the same attitude towards cops and the same fear.
Then you have this piece, Birds and Bees, about cops. Is this a conversation between parents and child, a mother and her daughter, about the, and you know, we often have heard Black parents talking about the talk, this, you know, very sort of grim kind of conversation that they feel like they have to have with their children about police violence. Is that what this piece refers to?
Yes, and I want to just go back to the Target City piece just one more time and just talk about how the woman is kind of like on top in the swing, and she's being asked, the Black guy asked her husband, fiance, boyfriend, lover, ask her to switch places with her so that she drives, because they feel like, you know, maybe they will be a little bit more safe if she's driving as opposed to him. So I think that's a really important thing to that must be stated, because I've been in the car with, you know, male friends, and we had to switch places on the rush, you know, because they were afraid of police. So, yeah. Oh. And so, yes, this conversation would be, again, kind of addressing multiple issues, which is...
This is the piece, Birds and Bees, about cops, so which for our TV audience is up on our screens right now.
Yes. And in this one, again, I'm addressing several different issues, which we have the issue of potential for police violence. And then we have, you know, race issues, gender, sexuality, as well as colorism. And that's something really kind of specific and within the African-American community a little bit more so than something that everyone else outside of the community talks about. I think outside of African-American daily life, people talk about racism. But within African-American culture, we talk about racism and we talk about colorism, which means a preference or a belief that and an observation that people who are light skin or lighter skin Blacks with smoother hair, with features that are closer to what white people look like, do better, have more, are smarter, get more opportunities, and are more beautiful.
So tell us about the way in which this exhibit is set up. And this, of course, unfortunately, only our LA audience will get a chance to see it in person. But we are showing some of the images on our screens right now. Tell me a little bit about this exhibit. You have a solo. It's a solo exhibit. Is this sort of part one of more coming?
So I don't want to spend a lot of time making this work. I mean, I've already spent a year and a half making this specific exhibit. What I can tell you is that the work is of different sizes. It's, you know, it ranges from small pieces to sort of epic Asian scroll-like pieces.
And are they on fabric?
They are on fabric. And my intention with making them originally was to do something that was kind of a contemporary take on Haitian voodoo drapeau. They're like religious, beautiful sequin religious flags. I thought, oh, maybe I'll try putting sequins. And I did like five on a piece of fabric. And I was like, no,
I'm not. It takes a lot of work to hand sew sequins.
Maybe one day I'll be able to have a staff of people who can apply the sequins. Oh my gosh, they are extraordinarily beautiful. I actually saw some in Haiti earlier this year when I was there, and it was just amazing. And I also had other inspiration, you know, in mind, like Faith Ringgold. She's a contemporary African-American critical artist who became well known for kind of like a social political quilting. Mm-hmm. This narrative artwork. And then Harriet Powers, she has the oldest surviving African-American quilts in America. And so I saw myself as doing a kind of story quilting, a take on story quilting, you know, that combines illustration and digital art making, textile art, and, you know, just contemporary painting. I still consider myself a painter, even though the works are on fabric. Mm-hmm.
And so where can people see the exhibit in person if they're in the LA area?
The gallery is called Gallery 825, and it's located at 825 La Cienega Boulevard, just a couple blocks south of Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. The gallery does have a website. It's gallery825.com, and it should have, or could be .org. I'm sorry about that. I'm not exactly sure. But they have a website, and you can go there and you can see information about the artists and the exhibits. And yes, there will actually be three solo exhibits within the same space and a group curated show.
Okay. And it goes through?
It goes through November 18th next month, so it will be up for 4 weeks.
And then for those of our audience that are outside Los Angeles, they can see some of the works on your website?
You can definitely see the work on my website, and that will be updated.
And that's zealsart.com?
Yes. Right now, what you can see is the flat images of the artwork before it was actually put onto fabric. So you're kind of looking at kind of like the original, kind of like the study.
Right. So one of the things that I also wanted to ask you was that I understand that you are... you know, you're clearly a very overtly political artist, which I think is great. Some artists don't like to be overtly political, but I think one of the best things about being an artist is to express politics through it. I understand you have a collaboration with Black Lives Matter that's in the works. Can you tell us a little bit about how you see yourself as part of the movement somehow, even as an artist?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I actually was contacted by a representative of BLM, Black Lives Matter, and ask if I would be interested in participating as a lead artist on a project. I'm not a representative of the movement per se, not a spokesperson. I just happen to have artwork that shares a lot of the same objectives and sentiments. And I'm really happy to be able to do this project because it's kind of an affirmation of the value of my work and what I'm doing and on an internationally recognized level.
So that should be coming up within the next year?
Actually, it's coming up at the end of the month. Okay, so it's actually the Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead Festival, that's happening at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery on October, the last October of this month.
Finally, Azeel, one of the things that I wanted to also ask you was that I think it's important for us to acknowledge that the art world, as it is the traditional art world, at least, is definitely very white dominated. Art is something that a lot of, you know, can require a lot of privilege to be able to do if you have a lot of money and can get the art education and then can get the inside connections. It's a network based thing. How have you navigated this world as a Black woman?
That's a very long and difficult and emotional question. That's another interview. But I will say,
have you struggled to even be taken seriously as an artist?
Well, I can definitely say that I have felt that. Let me say this first. It is ironic that a lot of validation for my work, I feel, as well as many of my peers who are also highly art educated, often Black and female. A lot of our validation is coming from nonprofit organizations and community organizations. So, and that can be pretty prestigious. And at the same time, it still keeps us in a place where we're not really profiting from our work, because those institutions don't usually have it. And they're not usually focused on trying to help you develop your career or to make a living at what you're doing. So most of us, no matter what level we're at, even internationally exhibiting and recognized artists, sometimes are still not making their main money from their artwork. So they're doing other things like talks, they have another job, they have real estate, there's another source of income. It is a pay-to-play game, and no one should ever tell you anything different. So when they talk about privilege and elitism, we can start by saying it's a pay-to-play game. And sometimes the pay is
meaning not. The more money you have, the more access you can have in the art world for various reasons, right?
Yes, but you do still need to have talent, and that talent can be divided across, your actual artistic talent as well as your talent for dealing with people, and being able to market yourself and your work to fit into certain climates.
Right. These days, artists are expected to do everything, not just create their art, but essentially sell it, market themselves, promote themselves. You know, it's the doing art part of it, sadly, is only one component, right?
Yeah. Well, last night I was at the Hammer Museum, and I was listening to Sanford Biggers and Greg Tate talk, and, you know, Sanford Biggers just said, you know, I make my work to make a statement. If it sells, that's great. And I kind of feel like I come from that position. Like, my first objective is to try to fill this void of imagery, like narratives that are imaginative and visual, that are artwork, 2D artwork, illustrative artwork done by Black women. And that is very difficult to find in the history of this country. So I feel that it's my calling, it's my responsibility, it's my gift to be able to do that kind of storytelling.
Your works can be purchased on your website?
Yeah.
We'd like you to make a living as an artist.
Yes, I have prints that are available as well as original paintings. You can contact me directly. There are also a couple of representatives, such as Los Angeles Art Association, which is where the art exhibit is happening tomorrow, as well as Valda Lake, who runs Wall Space Gallery on La Brea near Melrose.
Zeal, good luck to you. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm sure there's a whole lot of names of people that I forgot. Please don't be mad at me, people.
Thank you so much, Zeal. My guest has been Zeal Harris. She is a Los Angeles-based visual artist. She has an MFA in studio art from Otis College of Art and Design, and she's had her work featured in a wide variety of exhibits. Again, you can find out more about her work online at zealsart.com, zealsart.com. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/RU with Sonali.